Hello, good afternoon. We would now like to begin our press event related to the private sector forum that we had midday Tuesday during our high-level conference. I'm Jim Butler, Deputy Director General at FAO. I had the pleasure of being the moderator for the panel. We had the distinct honor and pleasure of having former Secretary General Kofi Annan chair our panel, and he provided some brief remarks with regard to his current role in Agra. Several of you may have been in this room at midday today when he and the Rome-based agencies signed a collaborative agreement with the opportunity to work together in Secretary Kofi Annan's current role with Agra. I want to provide just a brief statement from the conclusions of our private sector forum, and then I will ask three of the panelists that were with me yesterday to introduce themselves and also make statements, and then we would welcome your questions. The summary of the event from yesterday regarding the private sector: under the chairmanship of Mr. Kofi Annan, the private sector forum provided a platform of exchange and dialogue with senior executives of the International Associations of Fertilizer, Seed, and Feed, as well as the Gates Foundation. The panelists offered their views on the driving forces behind soaring food prices and on the role the industry can help in ensuring global food security. The present food situation was seen as presenting an opportunity for agriculture development. Agriculture has been subject of underinvestment for several decades. Low food prices have contributed to this significantly. Today, everyone recognizes the importance of agriculture and that the world leaders leave this conference with the message to increase the investment in agriculture as one means to help us overcome poverty and hunger. To counteract soaring food prices, we need to work together on all the right policies for pro-poor and pro-agriculture. Although we may expect over the next few months a downward correction in agricultural prices, the real food price increases will be sustained into the near future. The opportunity for partnership has never been greater between the public and the private sector. International organizations have to collaborate with the private sector so that both the financial resources and the human resources can help us overcome this current challenge. With that, I would just say that in the Food and Agricultural Organization, we're also currently undergoing a reform. Several recommendations from our governing body members have given strong encouragement for FAO to work more proactively with the private sector and foundations. The Director General asked that I provide some assistance and leadership in our future role with private sector and foundations, and in particular asked me to help organize this panel that occurred yesterday at our high-level conference. I want to now recognize the representative from the Seed Industry Association and ask him to provide some comments. I believe several of our panelists also have literature that would be available as well. Marcel.
Thank you, Jim. My name is Marcel Bruins. I'm Secretary General of the International Seed Federation, ISF. And I think it's important to note here also that seed is the start of everything. It takes seeds to produce food for humans, feed for animals, fiber, fuel, all kinds of industrial applications. So seed is really the start. And what I presented yesterday, probably the main message was that a good seed industry is needed in those countries where we see undernourishment. And rather than providing lengthy pages with talking points, probably for a first insight for you, it would be interesting to compare membership maps, world maps, with membership of, for example, ISF. And then it's probably good to tell you that the membership of ISF consists of national seed associations, so the Kenyan Seed Association and the Chile Seed Association and you name it, and to a much smaller extent also seed companies. If you compare those world maps with members, with the membership of, for example, UPOV, the International Union for the Protection of Plant Varieties, or with the membership of ISTA, the International Seed Testing Association, or with the membership of the OECD Seed Schemes Program, you'll see there is a very large correlation between those maps, between those world maps. And if then, on top of that, you compare it with the FAO world map for undernourishment, there is a striking correlation. In those countries where undernourishment is the highest, there is a lack of a seed industry and a lack of seed regulations. So that would probably be the main message for a good continuous flow of high quality seeds, of high quality varieties. You need a good seed industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Luke Mann, Chief Executive Officer of the International Fertilizer Association. Luke.
Thank you very much, Jim. And I do have to apologize because yesterday, those of you who were present, they have faced the president of our association, Mr. Torleif Enger, who is the president and CEO of Yara, one of the largest fertilizer companies. I do represent the fertilizer industry, the International Fertilizer Industry Association. And we came here to Rome about 2 weeks after our annual conference, which took place in Vienna, where we extensively discussed the issue which is here being discussed, namely the soaring food prices and what we, as a credible industry, what we can do. And we divided this in three different segments. There is the short term, the medium term, and the long term. Now, the short term and the long term are the easy ones to tackle, because we know in the short term, if there is a crisis situation, then there is an immediate response that should come forward, whether this is in the form of a support to the World Food Program, if it's money that is needed, that is something that the industry can contribute to. If it's a question of having an acute need of fertilizers, then fertilizers can be donated, but that's a one-off situation. We see this response to a crisis situation. On the long term, we realize that agriculture is back on the agenda of the policymakers. We see everywhere agriculture is in the limelight. That means that we need additional research in agriculture. We need extension services have to be reinstated. Farmers have to be accompanied on how to better use the inputs. So that's the longer term. So we have been concentrating on what it is that we can do in the medium term, that is between now and 5 years. And our president yesterday alluded to and showed, and this sort of map is available. We have copies available. And it shows, we chose three countries, Thailand, Tanzania, and Mali. And we showed what the cost of fertilizer is and what the ultimate cost is to the farmer. And if we have a cost of fertilizer to the farmer of X in Thailand, we have a cost to the farmer in Tanzania of X plus 50%, and in Mali, which is a landlocked country, it's X plus 80%. And we think that it is that segment in the supply chain, what we call an agriculture corridor, a supply corridor, it's that segment that we should concentrate on. That is where we, as an industry, can see great potential for public-private partnership, because we can't do this alone, neither can the government. It's not sufficient to just build roads and build infrastructure. You need private sector involvement, you need private sector initiatives, and together with government initiatives, we think that we can slash that tremendous cost to the farmer and make sure that that is reduced. As a matter of fact, during the meeting yesterday, our president committed, as the company, committed himself to the development of special port facilities for handling fertilizers in two ports in Africa, in Beira and Dar es Salaam. Because one of the problems is if you need small quantities of fertilizers to go to Africa, you can't even find a vessel to take it there. because the vessel, every day that it stays in a port and it is not offloaded, it is costing between $60,000 and $70,000 a day, which is added to the cost of fertilizer. And in many cases, the vessel will leave without any backhaul. So these are some of the problems that we as an industry, together with public sector, are trying to see what we can do to facilitate a more efficient supply of fertilizer to those countries that need it. And there is great potential for public-private partnerships in this. So this is one of the areas that we are looking at. The other area that is very important is that when the farmer gets a fertilizer, as I said, extension services are almost non-existent today from the public sector. We need to accompany the farmer to make better use of his fertilizer, because the better he uses the fertilizer, he will increase his yields, he will create markets, and he will use less fertilizer, hopefully, and be much more environmentally friendly by getting more out of the fertilizer that is available to him. So, Jim, this is in a nutshell a little bit what we discussed yesterday, how we can, we came here really to see what is it we can do together with the public sector as an industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. I'd now like to ask Fred Stevens, the president of the International Feed Industry Federation, to make his statement.
Thank you, James. The International Feed Industry Federation is comprised primarily of the largest international associations as well as corporate entities, and our membership represents over 80% of the world's feed production. Obviously, as my friend knows, animal feed is a significant user of grain. Therefore, we have experienced the recent price increases globally in the world grain supply. And basically, our total tonnage globally is somewhere in the 900 million ton range. Key drivers for meat, meat demand on our global population and per capita income. It's not surprising then, in the recent years, China's middle class, along with India, particularly since 1999, have grown substantially. And they've actually had an increase. In the last 15 years, the demand for meat in China has tripled by since 1999. Food has actually, I think, an interesting piece of data. The emerging market feed food demand has increased nearly 45% since to 2001-2007 period. Primarily, we believe this is a reflection of improving incomes in developing worlds and also population growth. When incomes improved in developing nations, there is an absolute direct correlation between a switch from starch-based diets to meat-based diets. So the challenge for the international meat and feed manufacturers is how to continue to reach this demand, at the same time accounting for rising costs in both transportation, energy coming from higher oil costs, and we've outlined, I guess, to encapsulate it, we feel like the three primary areas that we're going to concentrate on. We've given a kind of a nomenclature, a name PET, which is we really think that for us to continue to provide abundant and efficient, wholesome meat protein, we need to continue to review policy, particularly government policy, as it relates to trade barriers that at times can put up impediments against the efficient transfer of ingredients as well as finished food. Secondly, we would like to continue our effort with FAO in collaboration to reach out and help provide educational expertise from our developed members, members who have had a long history of being in the feed industry and a lot of experience in producing efficient feed to the emerging countries. And thirdly, we think it's going to take continued technology, technological developments in genetics, as well as nutrition, including such things as perhaps controversial in certain areas of the world as GMOs, need to be increased, and we recommend highly that the subject of these technological developments be on a science-based position to reach the best conclusion. We look forward to the challenge. As I said yesterday in our meeting, I think one of the huge benefits that came from this meeting that FAO has called is the recognition of the problem, because this problem, I think, derived to the world came very rapidly. If you go back into the middle, late 70s, early 80s, we've gone through a period of time where we have wanted to reduce grain inventories. And so we're just in time management techniques. And then in the late 90s, 1999, 2000, is when incomes began to really rise, and therefore a significant increase in meat demand. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Prabhu Pingali is the head of the Agriculture Policy and Statistics Division of the Gates Foundation, and he was with us yesterday as well.
Thank you, Jim. Let me quickly summarize some of the comments I made yesterday on behalf of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. For us at the foundation, we are quite concerned with the food crisis that's taking place today. We are concerned about the increasing numbers of food insecure populations around the world, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. And we are concerned that if immediate action is not taken, progress towards achieving the MDG goals of hunger reduction and poverty reduction will be significantly affected, and our progress, our achievement of those goals would be delayed. And that's something we would like to be trying to find ways in which we can work with partners to change the situation and to move forward and put us back on track towards achieving the MDG goals. In the short term, we think that there are two ways in which we can address the immediate crisis situation. We believe that we should be looking at opportunities for rapid infusion of food aid into areas where there is significant food insecurity problems, areas where food availability is a major issue today. The second aspect in terms of a short-term solution is that we'd like to encourage the global community to address the issue of immediate access to fertilizer for poor farming households in sub-Saharan Africa. As you all know, that food prices have gone up, but in many cases, fertilizer prices have gone up even faster than food prices have gone up. In some rural areas in sub-Saharan Africa, food prices have doubled, but fertilizer prices have gone up three times. And because of that, you do not see the supply responsiveness
coming out of sub-Saharan Africa that you see coming out of OECD countries today. And unless if we address the fertilizer problem, we are not going to be able to see rapid increases in productivity in the next 12 to 24 months in sub-Saharan African region. One of the areas where one could really look at making a difference in terms of fertilizer availability is to look at the top end of the fertilizer supply chain, to look at how one can improve procurement of fertilizers that are needed by countries, by several countries in Africa getting together and bulk ordering and bulk purchasing fertilizers from the international suppliers. If African countries can join together and create a bulk purchasing agreement, then we would anticipate that you will see enormous efficiency gains in the fertilizer procurement and in this fertilizer delivery process, and thereby leading to a significant reduction in overall costs of fertilizers that are acquired by these countries. Once the fertilizer availability problem is addressed, then the next issue is how do you improve access at the farm level? And here, there are several opportunities by which one can look at input voucher schemes, subsidized input vouchers that can be provided to poor farm households on a time-bound basis for a year or two-year time period, targeted towards very poor subsistence-oriented households, targeted towards food crops, et cetera, that could make a difference in terms of access to the fertilizers. Our partners, AGRA, that's working in sub-Saharan Africa, are very much involved in looking at ways in which they can improve access to fertilizers at the farm level, but also looking at opportunities for improving the overall procurement efficiency for fertilizers. Thinking about the longer term, the Gates Foundation has been investing quite significantly in enhancing agriculture productivity in Africa. Over the last 2 years, the foundation has invested around $800 million in agriculture development in Africa and in South Asia. A large share of that money actually goes to sub-Saharan Africa. A significant part of that funding goes through our partnership with AGRA, the Alliance for the Green Revolution for Africa. We see that increasing agriculture productivity is a very important way in which one can use agriculture as an engine of growth and as an engine of promoting overall economic growth and poverty reduction in most countries across sub-Saharan Africa. And that's the basis by which we've been making these investments. Let me just give you a very quick idea of three of our longer-term strategy areas as we look at enhancing agriculture productivity growth in sub-Saharan Africa. First, I think most importantly, a large part of what we would like to see in terms of increasing productivity would have to come through massive investments in agricultural research and development targeted towards crop and livestock activities. Here we are looking at the staple crops that are important for poor people across the region. We're looking at improvements in productivity of wheat, maize, and rice. But we're also looking at the so-called orphan crops, sorghum and millet. We're not just looking at yield improvements, but we're also looking at opportunities for enhancing nutrient content in the grain through biofortification programs, etc. And we're looking at opportunities to address some of the climate stresses that are very important to poor subsistence households. The most important one, of course, is drought. and we're looking at opportunities for varieties that are more tolerant to drought and tolerant to water stress conditions, etc. The second part of the way we are looking at enhancing agriculture productivity in the region is to look at enhancing local capacity to be able to use the new materials that's coming forward, to be able to adapt these materials to local conditions, to provide opportunities for participatory breeding programs, etc. So improved capacity for breeders, improved capacity for agronomists, soil scientists, etc., to look at both crop improvement but also crop management through better soil management, soil fertility management, etc. AGRA is also investing in promoting agro-dealer networks across the region so that you have private sector, small private sector involvement in enhancing access to inputs, access to seeds, et cetera, in rural communities. The third part of the overall strategy by which one can think about in enhancing agriculture productivity in the region is to promote local procurement of food aid. If we can create mechanism for local procurement of food aid, one creates the incentives for enhancing productivity at the farm level, but also the infrastructure that's put in place for local procurement, the roads, the transport infrastructure, et cetera, would then be available for creating an overall growth in agriculture productivity in the region and for using agriculture as an engine of growth. What we can do from our side is provide for a lot of the support on the R&D, capacity building, et cetera, targeted towards crops and crop productivity improvement. But there needs to be substantial complementary investment that needs to take place, complementary investments in terms of infrastructure development, road infrastructure, transport infrastructure, irrigation investments, etc. And a lot of this that needs to be done through multilateral agencies, other bilateral donors, etc. And that's something we'd like to advocate for as we look ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd be pleased to respond to your questions.
My name is Fujiwara from Mainichi Shimbun. And could you give me the reason that the difference of the price increase of the fertilizer and food in the sub-Saharan Africa, maybe you mentioned that in the fertilizer is a triple, but in food price is a double. And have you concluded any difference of the mechanism of the price increase?
We don't do any analysis ourselves. This is based on analysis that other people have done, including the International Food Policy Research Institute. The quick answer, of course, is that there's very little domestic supply of fertilizers in sub-Saharan Africa. Most fertilizers used in the region are imported from elsewhere. And as the overall prices have gone up, the cost of importing these fertilizers have also gone up quite significantly, and therefore most countries have cut back on fertilizer imports into the region, and that's raised the local cost that you see at the farm level.
Luke, would you like to also offer a comment?
Thank you, Jim. What I would like to say in that respect is that when you look at food prices over the past 25, 30 years, you will see that food prices have, if anything, they have been declining. And fertilizer prices, at best, have been stable. They have not increased. Fertilizer prices for the last 25, 30 years have been pretty stable. What that means is that the margins that the companies had on fertilizers were small. And there has been, and we recognize that, there has been underinvestment in building additional capacity. As demand goes up, that additional capacity was not there. So we live today in a very tight market. The fertilizer market is very tight. Supply and demand are really very tight. Now, when we suddenly see that there is a surge in demand, that obviously creates a price increase, because that's the law of supply and demand. Now, on top of that, and we have to realize that fertilizer is a bulky material. Now, when you transport bulky materials, transport costs have gone up, energy prices are going up. So the cost of producing fertilizer goes up because it's a high energy input. Secondly, to transport it, you are going to pay a lot more, because when I look at, for instance, the rates for sending fertilizers across the ocean, the rates have gone up tremendously. So you have an escalation of the price of fertilizers ultimately to the end user. So it's not surprising that the fertilizer prices have actually increased more than the food prices have increased. We are now in a situation where the fertilizer industry is trying to build up capacity and increase the capacity. That's what we are good in. What we're best in is produce more fertilizer. But what we are faced with, that is that when you build additional capacity, it takes from, let's say, 3 to 4 years for nitrogen, up to 7-8 years for phosphate or potash, before you get actually the production of the ground, and you get a return on your investment, which may be as much as 2.5 billion euro to build a new facility. So you need to find investors who are willing to put up 2.5 billion euro to build a new facility with a prospective return on their investment in 7 years' time. So these are some of the constraints that we're facing now. We're trying to do something about it. We're building additional capacity, but it will take some time. So for the foreseeable future, we see a tight market in terms of fertilizers.
Thank you.
Marta Falconi, Associated Press. I apologize for missing the first part of the news conference. I'm still not clear on what is the contribution of the private sector to the current food crisis. In other words, what are you offering advice? What are you concretely going to do? Thanks.
Marcel, would you? I'll just ask all the panelists to provide a brief comment. Thank you.
The seed sector has always focused on making better varieties, better adapted to local environments and drought resistance, and also pest and disease resistance has always been one of the main targets of the seed sector. So we will continue that. And I've heard in several companies already that they will step up their activities in that direction. With regard to public-private partnerships, the members of ISF, of the International Seed Federation, have always been engaged in those partnerships, in U.S. aid, for example, in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they will continue to do that. So I think probably the largest part of the solution is to increase productivity. And obviously, productivity increase depends greatly on better varieties, and the seed sector will work very hard to make even better yielding varieties, more resistant varieties with better nutritional composition, etc.
Thank you. As far as the fertilizer sector is concerned, as I mentioned before, in the short term, we are not shying away from our responsibility. So if there is an acute crisis somewhere and there is a contribution that is needed in terms of food aid or in terms of fertilizer donations, then we will definitely face up to that challenge. Fertilizer donations, taking into consideration that we want to make sure that it doesn't disturb the market. So what Dr. Pingali was mentioning about the voucher system and so on, and involving the local retailers, that is something that we very much are in favor of. That's the short term. In the medium term, what we're trying to do is increase the efficiency of the supply chain and make sure that we create this, what we call agricultural growth corridors, so that the farmer gets a better deal out of the purchase of the fertilizers he makes. And in the long term, we're looking at research in producing better products, better performing fertilizers, better management practices so that the farmer uses the fertilizer in a better way, and simply trying to increase the efficiency to the maximum so that we really come to a sustainable, environmentally friendly use of the inputs. Thank you.
Well, to repeat, I think the feed segment, again, we characterize as PET, policy, education, and technology. First, and I think foremost, in the emerging markets and developing nations, we're making a significant effort to reach out, take the expertise to those developing countries, and educate them on the most efficient ways to raise meat protein. Secondly, technology. It's interesting to note that since 2002 through 2006, while the world's meat production has increased by 11%, grain going into meat has reduced by 4%. So you have a significant improvement in technology as far as nutritional expertise, which benefits the consumer. Also, we make an effort towards GMO technology, which we strongly support. And then thirdly, under policy, I think our associations are, as an example, China, the United States, the EU, and Brazil are all members of the board of IFIF. And we continue to discuss with regulators, and we try to impress upon them to review on a scientific basis and a reality basis some of the regulations, impediments to a global transition of food and ingredients for food, so that you can have an expeditious transfer of products. So with us, we attack at policy, education, and technology.
Thank you. Other questions? I think you heard the Gates comments earlier. So we've got two over on this side.
Yes, Pierre Cochet from La Croix, French Daily. So in your last answer, I mean, you succeed in giving no one figures. So I would like to ask to Mr. Butler, I mean, what is the amount, more or less, of the brought by the private sector in the FAO budget, for example, first question, and in some projects? And second, the Bill and Melinda Gates, you were talking of $800 million on the last 2 years on projects in agriculture. So just to have the comparison of over 2 years, what is the amount brought by FAO?
Thank you. As you know, member governments represent the FAO, and the member governments, our 191 members, are the ones who pay our assessment. We also have emergency operations through specific donors. I don't have a precise figure on donations from the private industry, for instance, to help us deal with avian flu. But as the panelists have described, there is much collaboration beyond financial commitment that has occurred for many years in the past, and now a renewed commitment for increased collaboration. We feel there are opportunities to work on financial collaboration, but I think our first step needs to be sharing information, as been pointed out by the panelists, and not seeking financial support so much as the initial steps of collaboration. Gates may also.
I'm not quite sure what else to say about that. Our overall agriculture in grant portfolio for the last 2 years has been in the order of $800 million. And much of that money has been invested in sub-Saharan Africa in the area of crop improvement, livestock systems, better market systems, connecting farmers to markets through the value chain. And increasingly, we are also working on better policies and better data systems. So that's an area that we've been investing in. Our objective is primarily to help our partners in sub-Saharan Africa achieve enhanced productivity growth.
Thank you.
Je m'appelle Mohamed Baz, je suis de Radio Radicale. Je voulais tout simplement poser une question après l'argument sur les engrais. Et donc, je veux parler de la pollution de l'environnement tout d'abord en Afrique subsaharienne. La place de l'eau et sa maîtrise. Quel dispositif avez-vous mis en place ou que vous mettriez en place dans le futur pour pouvoir faciliter justement la survie, surtout des paysans dans la sous-région. Merci. Merci.
Thank you. I'll provide an initial response to see if others would like to do the same. Just within the last segment, where we were reporting on the results of the Transboundary Pest and Animal Disease Roundtable, I was citing examples of sharing information from across developing countries in the sense of farmer field schools. And the minister from India was stating yesterday in a meeting that he would be pleased to provide experiences from smallholders in India with smallholders in Africa. He specifically mentioned fertilizer and fertilizer application and sharing these experiences. We certainly know that water management is very important for the use of developing crops, livestock, applications of fertilizer. But it again is this collaboration that I was emphasizing, where we're extending knowledge to the smallholders, that I believe will be a result of this increased collaboration with the private sector. Anyone else?
Thank you, Jim. What I would like to add, and specifically on India, I mentioned earlier that in most countries, in most developing countries, the extension services, if anything, are very weak. And a lot of the extension efforts are actually now conducted by our own member companies. And India is really a world case study, because the fertilizer companies, they have set up farm centers, and in these farm centers, the smallholder farmers are accompanied not only in the use of fertilizer, but also with crop protection chemicals, with their water management, with the entire agricultural input sector and production sector, better seeds. Everything is in that farming center, and these farm centers are run by individual companies. So there is definitely use for transfer of technology from India to other developing countries. This is a very good example of South-South cooperation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alexander Push. I'm with the Executive Intelligence Review. I have a question in particular to Dr. Bruins and the representative from the fertilizer industry. I think a lot of the discussion has been around searching for causes for the recent price increases in food. And obviously, your respective sectors, also the feed industry, are very much interrelated. And you mentioned the fact of price increases recently. Now, in the petroleum sector in particular, I think you can identify at least a substantial portion of the price increase related to speculation. And my question would be, in how far are your respective private or representations of private industry willing to cooperate with governments to actually regulate markets, in the fact that you would try to try to eliminate that aspect of price increases, for example, in the energy sector, which then spreads throughout the entire that production sort of production line?
Yes, thank you. I think it's good to separate seeds from commodities. And as you're probably very well aware, the commodity prices have risen 10, 20, 30, 50%, sometimes 100%. Seed prices, however, have hardly risen at all, 2, 3%, sometimes explainable by the inflation. And this is very clear because the seed production industry is, of course, much smaller than the whole farming community. The farmer uses a lot of fuel to plow his land, to sow his land, all the diesel that goes into that. So if you have a much higher transport cost, of course, the price of commodities is increasing. I do expect that the seed price will rise probably a little bit, but by far not the the percentages that we see currently in the commodity market.
Thank you. Well, as far as fertilizer is concerned, and I mentioned it before, it's a bulky commodity. It requires quite a bit of energy to produce fertilizers, and these energy prices have been going up substantially. Transporting bulky commodities over long distances definitely has brought up the prices. Living in a situation where supply and demand are very tight, very close to each other, also has an effect. And what I haven't mentioned before, but this is certainly an aspect that you also should not overlook, and that is that in certain countries, there have been export tariffs on fertilizers because the country wants to make sure that that own country is provided with fertilizers without suffering from so that they're not exported. So putting up these export tariffs, in some cases even export bans, is certainly not helping in regulating the market and making sure that the prices are not unduly increasing. So that's that would be my short answer.
And when you're looking at meat, I think the figure that we would hang on right now might change later, but basically, when you look at fertilizer and its contribution to the cost of meat, it's about 2%. Really, most of the increase in meat production is coming from increased demand because of rising incomes. And as long as incomes rise and people demand more meat, that's going to be probably the common thread that's going to follow it. Population, it's simple. If people demand more meat, and there's more people on the earth, the price of food will go up.
Thank you. We'd welcome one more question, and I want to thank the panelists, and I'll just remind those in the audience, I believe the panelists also have some information available in various locations around the room. One more question. Anyone? All right. Thank you very much for your participation, and thank you very much, panelists, for not only this afternoon, but your contributions yesterday to our forum as well.